This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of She Builds Charrettes.
Charrettes are bonus episodes where we talk more about certain topics, make major announcements, and conduct interviews. Basically, She Builds Charrettes is our playground for things outside our typical format.
Right. So no need to worry, we are still doing our regular show.
On today's Charrette, we are joined by Kirsten Cessna, Managing Director of Gensler Austin and author of the blog, Balancing Careers and Caregiving, How We Can Better Support Architects and Designers Who Are Parents and Caregivers.
Kirsten, we are so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. I know this is a bit of a topic that not a lot of people talk about, and that's why I wanted to talk about it.
So exactly.
Let's be real.
Yes.
Love yes. it.
All right. So could you share with us a little bit of how you got into architecture? Where'd you go to school? And what type of projects are you working on lately?
Yes. So I'm an interior designer by trade. I actually thought I wanted to be an architect since about the age of 7. I have to thank my younger brother. He was born after me. I'm number 2 and 5. And he was given Legos. And I had the Lincoln Logs, and they were great, but it was the Legos that I would break down all of his creative little weird engineering things, and then I would build buildings. And I would draw buildings, and I didn't draw like normal kids. So it was just really early on that I figured, okay, architecture was it for me. And then I had to decide where I wanted to go to college as you're graduating high school. And I couldn't actually pick a school. I had applied to all these different architecture programs, and I just started having this identity crisis. And my mom said, go shadow an architect for a day. And so I did. And I was like, you know, this is really interesting. Something's just not clicking though for me. As I kept talking about the exterior of the building and more about the curb appeal and the approach to the building, I was like, what happens once you go past the threshold? Like, and so I told my mom, I was like, I don't know if it's what I want to do anymore. And she was like, wait, what? And she said, I was explaining it to her, and she says, I know an interior designer talked to her as well. And she hit the nail on the head for me It was about how the spaces relate to people and how they behave in them and function in them. And that just hit the nail on the head for me. It's, for me, it's about the, how people experience the spaces from the curb all the way through, like, to the bathroom and, like, out to the trash can and all those different things, every little nuance element of it. So then finally I went off to college, did the 4 years, then started internships and just have loved all of it. And ironically, most of my career has been new construction. And I, you know, worked my way up to a design manager where I'm managing the architecture and the interiors. And I love it because I've always been partnered with really strong architects and they value my opinion on the exterior of the building, even asking me about the landscape, which I know what an LER Steven is. And I know a few different bushes, but design is foundational. So whether you're an architect, interior designer, landscape architect, having those different conversations really to bring out the best product in our projects is really what I'm passionate about. But I, you know, went to, got my undergrad at the University of Missouri, Columbia, go Tigers, and then started my career, did internships in St. Louis, and then started my career in Dallas. At the beginning of the Great Recession, as we called it back in 08, 09, 10. And that was hard. It was really hard. But I was so thankful to be in Dallas and with a firm that was really strong and was fiscally conservative. So didn't hire up and fire out. So we weathered the recession really well. And at that time I was doing aviation design, and talk about having to find what your passion is in such a large project type where you're on one project for 4 years or longer. And to me, it became about the traveler and how they go through the building and making sure that their anxiety levels stay low. And that was really impactful for me. So it really, again, came back down to that traveler, that passenger, the people aspect of it. But at that firm, our CEO said one time, we're just a bunch of architects trying to run a business. Red flag.
Yeah.
Trying to run a business. So obviously that's not really what he meant, but just that statement made me think, I want to go back and get a master's. And I for so long thought because I loved architecture, I wanted to get a master's of architecture. I instead went back and got a master's of business administration. I got my MBA, not to change careers or anything like that, but really to enhance my business understanding. And it has helped tremendously. When I ultimately came to Gensler almost 10 years ago, I was hired in to really be a lead interior designer, lead the interiors of our retail studio in our Dallas office. That's where I was at the time. And I quickly got into the management side and then became an operations leader for our studio, then a studio director, which I was a studio director for 5 years. And then I got the amazing opportunity to come down to Austin, where I'm now managing director here. And I love it because design, our people, the business side, it all wraps up together in this role. And I just love it.
That's great. I had no idea that you went to get your MBA as that's something I've considered. So
yeah,
that's cool. And I like also this, it seemed like from what I'm hearing that in the design aspect, you were focused on the user, the end user. But it seems like now and with this blog, you're focused on like the designer, like the humanitarian aspect of like the designer and how they work and navigate through the company. And so I see the connections and how your journey has been so far. So, which brings me to my question about this blog. Let's just dive right in. We got to know you a little bit, but now let's get to the nitty gritty. For you, Kirsten, what was the catalyst for this blog on balancing careers and caregiving? And when did you realize that you wanted to start unpacking this topic?
So it's actually been several years that I've been thinking about this topic. Really, it probably really started during the pandemic. And during the pandemic, when we were all at home, our regional HR director started this G-Parents, where we would get on based off of your children's ages. You know, if you had infants to toddlers, you were one group. If you had, you know, toddlers to preschool, you were another group. If you had elementary kids, you were another group, and so on. And so we would do that. And initially it was great. And then it just petered off. Yeah. And then we didn't really have anything else. And really being in the role that I am as a principal, but now as a managing director, and even when I was a studio director, because I was in that role during the pandemic, just seeing the challenges, and really it started out with the moms, seeing the challenges that the moms were having with their kids at home and them at home, how to get that relief. And then we started talking about a little bit, how do we keep women in this profession? What are we doing as employers to help them? We didn't have any good answers. And then you start reading all these articles as we start coming back into the office, and hybrid, everything should be hybrid. And when you're in a collaborative, creative apprenticeship industry, you need to be around each other, because the impromptu collaboration, be able to have someone sketch with you how to work through details, how to work through wall sections. It's really, really important. And yes, we kind of muddled our way through. We've got to be honest, we muddled our way through the pandemic. And so we started looking at these things and starting to have some conversations, but not really diving into the meat of it. And about a year and a half ago, our HR department team brought up to all of us principals in the region during a management committee meeting, we're seeing that women are leaving the profession at certain ages. And I asked the naive question, and maybe it wasn't so naive, maybe I was trying to poke the bear, of let's dig a little more into that. What are we seeing? And so I started talking with our HR director, like, maybe we should dig into this more. Gensler has these grants that we do, and predominantly they're design grants, but they can also be just other systems that we're looking at. And we started talking with the idea. We never did anything with it. And then as we've, you know, mandated part-time in the office, like 3 days out of 5 days, and then 5 days in the office, getting a lot of pushback and trying to understand what, why, and what is that looking like, and what are the challenges. I just one night woke up and said, I really want to actually talk to the moms. I want to understand what their challenges are and what we can be doing as an office to support them, to keep them in this industry. Because the more perspectives that we have, the better our designs are, the better the products are in the built environment, and the better impact that we're having on the community. And so I woke up very early on a Saturday morning and emailed our my PR manager, and she didn't laugh at me. And so I said, okay, let's do this. But it can't be just a couple of people. I really wanted a good cross section of our Austin office. I wanted principals, senior associates, associate, non-titled. I wanted children of varying ages, and also was looking at just the demographics. It's not going to be all white. It's not going to be all Hispanic, Black, Indian. I really want a really strong cross section. And I knew we had moms who, you know, had children on the spectrum, had high schoolers with toddlers, and just a very diverse group that we could talk to really understand. And thankfully everyone was willing to do it. And they actually said when we were meeting during our discussion was they were really happy we were doing this, that we were actually having this conversation, because let's be honest, this is a bit taboo. No one really wants to talk about it. And the focus that I guess really for me was on the design community, because a lot of the articles out there are about the tech industry, the financial industry, very different industries compared to the architecture community. We're unique. And so let's have a conversation about the uniqueness of us and what we need to support one another.
So
I like that you say that no one wants to talk about it. It's taboo because then they'd be forced to do something about it.
Very true.
And like that, we were going to ask you this later on, but I think something that stuck out to me as I was reading your blog is how you take that on. Like you say that as a managing director, you feel like it's your responsibility to take this on and help normalize these behaviors. I'm kind of paraphrasing what you said, but it ties into everything you just said and how you wanted to do start somewhere. And I'm wondering how did people respond to this endeavor? Like they said yes, but was there some pushback as well?
So with the women that I met with, there wasn't pushback. They want to see more come out of this. And what I will applaud is the women that we had the conversation, they've actually created their own G-moms, it's called. At Gensler, we put G in front of like everything. And so it's our G-moms group. But they've created a support network among themselves. And the blog talks about this. It's creating a family within the organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go out to lunch together about once a month or every other month. And they just talk about what's real. What are they going through? Mm-hmm. And it really came out of the pandemic and those who had pandemic children and now coming back in the office, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I applaud them because it's, you need that support network, whether you're mm-hmm. a female or a male. And so we have that, but what I love was they said, we need to have more conversations about the men who are taking on more caregiving responsibilities as well, and make sure that they know that it's okay for them to do that. And we support them as well. And I guess one thing also I wanted to mention in that conversation was, our PR manager, she's a caregiver as well. She doesn't have children yet, but she helps with her nephews because mm-hmm. her brother and sister-in-law are doctors. And so that commands a lot of time. And then we have other examples of people in our office who are caregivers to nieces and nephews or to their parents. And they take that time because that's where what's important to them. And they make sure that they're showing up for their families. So we, in my opinion, need to be showing up for them as well and supporting them.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciated the vocabulary that you were using in the blog post and the conversation we had previously about this, just in terms of caregivers, right? Which encompasses much more than we regularly tend to consider. I've always thought too, that we need to be talking more about men as dads but I had never thought about, taking care of elderly parents or like aunts, you know, helping out with friends, kids, or family, and like the extended family piece and how you might be a support or caregiver as well in that way. And I'm wondering, how have you approached conversations with male employees who might not currently be caregivers or have ever had this topic on their radar, right, as something that's affecting them? Because I think that's something, right, that we aren't doing enough of, and it's just something that they don't think applies to them.
Right. So, I mean, like I don't go in front of the whole office and talk about these things. It's very one-on-one types of conversations. I would love to get up on a soapbox. That would be fantastic. But these are very...
You're here.
Exactly. But these are very personal conversations. And one thing that I think is fantastic is we have so many principals at Gensler who are dads. Mm-hmm. And them showing those behaviors and then me as a managing director supporting them and openly talking about what they are doing, supporting their families, going and leaving the office. Hey, I can't extend this meeting another 30 minutes. I need to go pick up my children from daycare. All right, great. You go do that. We'll keep going on and we'll let you know how it finishes. Or, mm-hmm. okay, guys, and that we're going to wrap up and we'll touch a base again tomorrow. Because we all know meetings go long. But I think it's just having outward expression of support and also talking about their children in the work environment and normalizing just even that little bit is super impactful. And then also, I also don't ever ask people like, when are you going to have kids? Because I hated that question.
That's fair.
But
don't we all?
Yeah.
But I think the more we can normalize having families, supporting our families, because why do we work? We work for the mm-hmm. things that we have and to support our families in whatever mm-hmm. way that that looks like. Whether you're the breadwinner or you're the supporter, from like a financial standpoint, because I'm the breadwinner in my family. And that was also a mind shift. Because stereotypically, the male is the breadwinner. And, you know, the blog talks about the stereotypes of our society. And so how do you balance that also? I mean, that could be a whole nother topic. Won't get into that.
For sure.
But I think the more we can showcase those men who are caregivers and are prioritizing that and making sure that everyone sees it's okay to do those things and go take the time your family needs, the more that others will do it. I think it's great. I think back to like my dad. I had a father. He did not become a dad until much later in my life, if you get my drift. Mm. He was the provider, not the nurturer. And he became much more so later in life. And I look at other males who, you know, are maybe more seasoned in their career. And that's a bit more similar to their dynamic with their families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of a generational thing. I'm super excited because this generation now isn't as much like that.
Yeah.
They're much more hands-on, which is great to see. Have kids, have more balanced dynamics in the roles.
Yeah.
Do you think it also has to do with how we all grew up? Like, just reading everything that you've been saying has made me think about, did you have a superwoman as you describe a superwoman as a mom? When you said that, I related to that so much because I grew up with a superwoman and it never dawned on me all the sacrifices she must have made, how she would have balanced it all. I think women just expected to do it all. And I'm glad that we're getting to a point, like you're saying, that we're reaching more balance in our families, dynamics and all these things. But how much do you also think that our history plays into it?
A lot. Yeah, no, I definitely. And of course, these are all my personal beliefs. I haven't done like psychology research or anything into it, but reflecting over my life, reflecting over friends' lives and just coworkers and seeing the dynamics, I definitely agree. And I will say, I am so proud of my mom. And technically, she's my stepmom, but she's my mom for all intents and purposes. My birth mom passed away when I was very young. My mom came into my life still at a very young age and super influential in my life. But when I was growing up, she was a stay-at-home mom. And during that time, I did not appreciate whatsoever what a stay-at-home mom does, especially when you have five kids. I'm one of five.
Whoa.
And
I caught that at the beginning. I was like, oh, okay. She said two of five.
I'm number two of five. But so just a little tidbit on my mom. I will brag about her because I don't
Let's
know.
Do
if,
it.
I don't, Please I don't do. Know if this Please word's do. Okay to say, but she's a badass.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, it is.
So she was 27 when she married my dad. She had her biological daughter, who's my youngest sister, and she took on four that were not her own.
Wow.
I was pregnant with my first at age 27. No way would I have taken on five kids at that. So that tells you right away.
Yep.
This woman's got some stamina and some meat to her. So then she left her corporate job. That's where she met my dad. They met in the business world. They met in the meeting. And she left to raise the five of us. She only forgot about me once, bless her heart. She forgot to pick me up. It's okay. I don't hold grudges whatsoever. But she raised us. And then when my two youngest sisters went off to college, she felt the calling to go back into the military. And you say, okay, Kirsten, you said back into the military. She was Marines. Then she went into the corporate world, raised us. Then she went back into the Missouri National Guard as a captain. She was in her 40s, had to go and prove to them why she should still be only a captain at that age. The military is hard, y'all. Mm-hmm. And she has had deployments, and she is now a lieutenant colonel. And I'm so proud of her. She has worked her butt off. And I mean, you think about how hard it is to get promoted out in the corporate world. It is so difficult in the military. And she has stuck to it. And she's now at an age where she is part-time military and actually now starting her own business as an executive coach. Okay. Yeah. So it's just like, I reflect.
No other word to describe her. She is a badass.
Right? But like me being the bratty, you know, elementary, middle, and high schooler, I didn't appreciate what she did as a stay-at-home mom. And then I really got that first dose of what a stay-at-home mom is like when I had my first child and was on maternity leave. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I need to go back into the office. So, I mean, this is another aspect is like we've got to also as a society recognize and respect all the different dynamics of families. But yeah, so that's my superwoman and she's phenomenal.
Can we say her name?
Yes. So she is Lieutenant Colonel Sandy Stover.
Oh gosh, that sounds like a badass name to begin with. Lieutenant Colonel Sandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's phenomenal. I just can't speak enough words for her.
I mean, she sounds amazing.
That's awesome.
Thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah. She does.
Yeah. She couldn't draw a building to save her life, but she can teach you a lot of other world. Things. Yeah. Yeah.
But I can see how growing up with her and seeing her doing all the things she does and how she navigates everything could be an inspiration for you as well as you navigate these conversations and seeing how we can make the work environment retain more women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, I was going to say, when we last spoke, we talked a lot about flexibility, right? And the fact that different things, schedules, even just what you were talking about with the different cross-section of people who have different kids at different ages with different needs and different types of caregivers. And so like different things are going to work for different people and families, right? And that might feel like very amorphous to an employer or even to an employee in terms of like how to create policies around that. So I guess, what do you think policies that support caregivers look like? How do you imagine them being written into employee handbooks? Or do you feel like, or I guess, what do you, how does that look?
So I really, it's a hard one because policies only do so much.
Right.
And I talk about it in the blog, policies only do so much. But I think, you know, those who are writing policies have to have high emotional intelligence because you have to come at it from a very much a social awareness standpoint. But also, I mean, I talk a little bit about it in the blog. I really think having the language about flexibility and understanding in the policy and having open communication and really emphasizing that is at the core, should be at the core of the policy. Because if people don't trust one another, don't have open communication, which is the beginning to have trust, then you can't have flexibility. Mm-hmm. And the flexibility is what allows people to be able to deal with whatever they need to at any moment of time, knowing, having that trust that that person is then going to come back and finish their professional obligations. So, I mean, I don't know how many times I've had people be like, hey, I have the internet coming or my pipe burst in my house or my apartment and I've got to run home and go do this, or, oh my gosh, my neighbor just called and said my dog got loose and I need to go and find my dog. Those are non-caregiving aspects. That's just being an adult and
life admin.
Yes. Life happens. And so even outside of being a caregiver and caregiver policies, that needs to be, to my opinion, that needs to be the core. And I'm very thankful and blessed that that's at the core of what our policy is. And then you layer on top of that caregiving. It's mm-hmm. still the same policy as every other adult, as every other employee should have. I definitely think that once we start saying, okay, and here's a separate policy for caregivers, then that creates a they versus them scenario. Yeah. And that is toxic. We can't have that in the work environment because our teams need to build trust. And if you create a them versus us scenario, you'll never have trust in the work environment. So obviously you're going to have your leave policies. Those are protected by the government, not going to touch those, but just our own cultural policies. I think that to me needs to be at the core. Now, each individual organization and company needs to look at extra elements of that. And what does that really look like? You know, Gensler's policy with flexibility might look slightly different than one of our competitors. But I think at the core and the understanding needs to be the same, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think another question that we were wondering is like, how do you keep track of the success of these policies, right? Is it employee demeanor, productivity, how much money employees are bringing in? How do we track if these are productive ways of supporting employees or not? And retention. Yeah.
So obviously each firm probably does their metrics differently. Obviously I'm very familiar with how Gensler, we track things. We do surveys a lot at Gensler. And so we do our annual kind of like official survey. Oh goodness. I think it's in January. We get a lot of really good feedback in that. But then we do what's called Pulse. We do about 6 months later, we do another kind of like, not as official, but kind of stemming from that original survey and the feedback we get there. And oh, believe me, lots of people let us know what they think of the different policies and even just our office environments. It's really great. And we then 6 months later, based off of the feedback we got there, and typically the ones that, you know, are more of the challenges for us to overcome, let's do another survey of like, have things improved? What are we seeing come out of those things? We don't ever say like policy on flexibility of coming into the of our office flexibility policy. How would you rate that? We don't do that directive metric, but really it's getting that gauge of what's the engagement of our people. Are we seeing people engage in the work that they're doing? Because we know when people are engaged, they do better product, and our clients are happy. And everyone will tell you repeat clients are the easiest clients to keep. You know, that's the easiest business building ever. So we look at that, but also it's just talking with our people, knowing your people and what's going on in their lives. That to me, that's the constant that goes throughout the year. It's having those real world conversations with people and checking in with them, how they're doing both professionally and personally. Other things are also like their performance, just their overall performance on their projects. Are they growing as professionals? Are they striving for that next challenge and improving upon, you know, previous projects, and they're working towards that next promotion, whether it be from architect to project architect or interior designer to senior interior designer, or going into a design management role or becoming a technical director. I think it's got to be about our people. And if our people are doing great, guess what's going to follow? The financial success as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So putting it on the flip side, say someone is interested in working for Gensler or for a firm that has similar policies or what have you. What would be questions that you would suggest the interviewee to ask during these interviews to get a sense of this flexibility in place that may benefit them as a, let's call them caregivers instead.
Just yeah. Let's already start to normalize that conversation. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really like that term. Thank you for bringing it into my life.
You know, I can't credit myself with that because it really comes down to the discussion that we had as a group and the constant conversation of us changing that lens of not just moms, but all of us together.
Right.
So it's not just me. It's all of us. So when you're in interviews, I think I want to contrast it to what we started seeing a lot coming out of the pandemic was people automatically asking, well, what's your policy on work from home?
Right.
That to me is a very polarizing question to ask.
Yeah.
It puts, you know, as the employee, you're kind of like on your back foot and you're like, ooh, how do I respond to that with, but then also the interviewee, you're like, okay, I want to make sure that I get the flexibility that I want to have. So I would change it to be like, what is your office's policy of, I guess, how would you phrase that? I mean, full transparency, you could just ask, what is your office policy? Is it flexible? Rather than saying the hybrid word or the work from home word.
Right.
Maybe just start using the word flexibility because I can't think of a way to, I don't want the parties to be at like have animosity because I feel like when you say hybrid or you say work from home or you say in office, someone is up in arms. And so starting to use terminology that is much more amicable, and I think flexible or adaptable seem to be better terms. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts?
No, I was going to think.
I would love some thoughts too.
Do you think that the animosity is because it's a new term, because we don't speak of it enough? Like, if we normalize the conversation, just like we're trying to do now in the terms of caregivers, like if we normalize these words, do you think the attitudes might change towards these terms?
Well, I think the key thing is the aspect of flexible and adaptable. I feel like that allows for more open discussion. Whereas if you come in and you're like, I want to work from home, can you do that? Or like,
yeah,
I only want to come in 3 days, but you know, of course, but you know, like I want to work 3 days out of the week, or, you know, on Mondays and Tuesdays, I have to take my kid to soccer practice or whatever, like things like that. Whereas if you say like, hey, you know, are you flexible if on certain days of the week I come in a little later, but I stay late, like adaptable, flexible, whereas just like, you know, so I think that's a really key thing about that. Because then, like you said, it opens up more conversations.
It does.
I think from the employee side or employer side, they already, especially if you're in the aspect of like you're interviewing for a job, that's why they take the step back. It's like, I'm looking to hire you and you're already thinking about working less hours or changing.
Well, and it's not even... I think there's also an element of it. It's not that they're necessarily going to work less hours, but it's it's that perception and therefore the trust. Like when you, hey guys, I'm part of the hiring process all the time, but when you automatically come and say like, and I don't know you yet, we haven't built a rapport, we haven't built trust. And you say, hey, I'm only going to work in the office 2 days a week and the rest of the week I'm going to work from home. I don't even like, that's taking a lot of trust from me to say, okay, you are capable and you're for sure going to do all of that. And it, I mean, we've just got to be honest. It's a two-way street from a trust standpoint. And I completely agree, Jessica. If someone was to come to me in an interview, not even in an interview, just everyday working life and say, hey, Kirsten, my kid is now in middle school and they have practices early in the morning, so I'm going to drop them off. I'm going to get to the office early in the morning, but then they have games this many nights a week and I want to be there. Their games start at 4 because, you know, that's when middle school games typically start.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, it's like, I'd be like, yeah, totally. And if you need to make, and if you need to make up hours at late at night, that's fine. You have 40 hours a week. My biggest thing as an employer, and this has always been my stance because the people that I've worked with in my career, this is always their stance. We have 40 hours in a week to get our workload done. If we're meeting our deadlines, you're an adult. Just figure it out. If you're doing it in the office, great. I can collaborate with you more. I can teach you more one-on-one. But if you need that flexibility to take your kid to the doctor or go to their middle school soccer game, do what you need to do, but also make sure you're getting your work done because we can't miss our deadlines. Architecture and design, we are a deadline driven industry.
Right.
When we miss those, guess what happens to our clients? They miss their deadlines, and that is lots of money sometimes out the door.
Yeah. I think that's so part of what I do in my day to day is I have these conversations, especially with the younger generation.
That's awesome.
It's like, well, it's just like, listen, man, like I tell the interns, like, listen, I don't need the life story. If you have to come in late, if you have to leave early, whatever. But like you said, it's like as from an employee standpoint, we just want to make sure that the work gets done.
Yeah.
You know, for those reasons, because and yeah, to allow that flexible work environment, because we're trusting you to get the work done. How you do it, it is what it is. But
yeah,
just as long as you get it done.
Yeah.
And I hope I.
But
yeah.
No.
You hope what? It. No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just realizing a lot of things like about trust because. Like you said, so I have interns too. And sometimes they tell me like all the reasons why they're going to come in 5 minutes late. And I'm like, I don't need it. But I realize that they're trying to build that trust with me. Like, hey, I want you to know I'm not slacking. This and this and this is going on. And just through this conversation, it just clicked for me.
Yeah.
And I trust them. I trust that.
Yeah.
I trust that they're going through something. I ask them like, let me know if you need anything. This is the deadline. Let me know if you need any support.
Yeah.
Just because they've shared all of that. And I'm also remembering Evelyn Lee. She's the incoming AIA president.
Right.
During the pandemic, she said something once that, especially during the pandemic, when we were all working from home, we had to communicate so much more than ever before. Uh-huh. Like, her whole team knew her babysitter schedule. Like they knew when she was going to be off and not. And when I was listening to it, I was like, that feels so invasive. Like my team has no need to know my life, but it's not about like losing privacy. It's about building trust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, transparency,
communication is huge. Mm-hmm. And it's to your guys' point, it's not about giving the long, full novel story.
Yeah.
It's just let me know. That way I know how best to reach out to you, whether it's at your desk or via, you know, these virtual ways. I know I can't say any
proprietary.
Oh, I think so.
Proprietary names. I shouldn't.
Just virtual. You can just say
virtual. this whole internet stuff. But I mean, it's, you know, it's just knowing where people are at, and it's not necessarily digging down into like, is that a really reasonable request for them to do that? No, it's just, I need to know in order for me to get my stuff done or to make sure our project is still moving smoothly, I just need to know what's the best way for me to contact you. If you need to go pick up your kid, I might be calling you on your cell phone in order to make sure something got to a consultant or whatever. But if you're at your desk, then I'm going to walk over to your desk and check in. I mean, I just reached out the other day, and I'm so glad I did, to one of my coworkers. He's another principal here in Austin. And I said, hey, because I had really great news to share with him. And I was like, hey, are you at your desk today? And he goes, actually, no, I'm working from home. It's the school's about to either school start for his kids this week or they start next week. And so he was working from home to be with his kids. And, I was like, okay, great. Then I won't come up to your desk and try and find you. And I'll just tell you right now. But it just comes down to the open communication, and mm-hmm. that helps build the trust. Mm-hmm. And so that also just feeds into the whole flexibility. The more communication, the more trust, the more flexible the relationship will be.
Yeah. On both ends.
Mm-hmm. On both ends. Completely.
Kirsten, can we find your blog, or is it internal to Gensler?
That's a good question.
Because I think listeners need to read your blog.
That's a good question. I will find out where it's at and we will send you guys the link.
Okay.
Good. Yay! If it's internal or if we have posted external, I don't know.
Okay.
That's a good question. How to do that?
Okay.
Okay.
Because those were a lot of important points that we've talked about and that are in that blog post, that I think it brings up the conversation to a much larger scale, that it's not just mothers that we're talking about. We're talking about caregivers. Okay. Keyword of the charrette.
Yes.
Caregivers and flexibility. Those are the two words that should be.
Yeah, and I think people having access to the blog will continue to grow this conversation more and more.
That's the hope.
So,
yeah,
of course. I mean, it won't happen overnight, as we know, but the more conversations though we have, the more things we write, the more things we share, the more it becomes normal.
Yeah.
So this all went from an idea that you had late at night for years to a conversation, to a control group, to a blog. And last time we spoke, you said you were thinking about making it a broader study. How has that continued to develop? Where do you go from here?
Yeah. So where we go from here is, I'm not going to create like a scientific study, but I think it's just utilizing Gensler Austin for us to have more of these normalizing conversations, and really also an emphasis of what we as an office can do to create that support network as a family and have periodic check-ins with different groups of these subsets and see how things are going. I think that's the most realistic way. As much as I would love to create a psychology experiment, I don't think that's the best and highest use of my talents. So I definitely think what I think is fantastic about the team and the culture that we are developing in Austin is we want to have more candid conversations. And so I think that is the best way. And the more we can normalize these behaviors, and for me and my partner, and I know I'm pointing to his office behind me, the more people realize how open we are to these conversations and really emphasize the flexibility that our policies have and what that really looks like and entails, making sure that our studio leaders and our principals are also emulating those same behaviors, the more this will become holistic. I think we'll just continue to see that in our various surveys. But to me, it's more important through the conversations and discussions that we have.
That's great. Okay, so we're reaching the end of our conversation. And at the end of our regular episodes, we always choose a caryatid who is someone today, a woman today that's holding up the profession. So at the end of our shrits, we like to ask our guests if there is a woman who has been inspiring you lately, or simply if there's someone that you want to shout out for their work and what they're doing today, you want to highlight them.
Man, I mean, it feels... I mean,
you already shout out your stepmom.
I did.
Badass.
She's a badass.
But if you had another one, that would be great too.
So I think I'm so not brown-nosing. I promise you, this is definitely to the core of why I'm still at Gensler and why I love our firm so much. Mm-hmm. I can look across our entire firm and see such strong women in leadership who reflect being a mom or being an interior designer or both, and they've taken their careers really far. I mean, Diane Hoskins, architect, stepmom, African-American, like, wow. Mm. she was co-CEO of our firm. But then more personally to me, I've worked with Cindy Simpson for the last 10 years of my career at Gensler. And what I think is phenomenal about her, I'm really speaking to what drives me and inspires me, is she's an interior designer. She adopted her daughter and she did that as a single mom. Like, she has raised her as a single mom and still pursued her career. She started in another profession, decided that wasn't it. She wanted to go to interior design, went back and got a degree, and has become a regional managing principal. And so what I think is so unique is no two women, no two people have the exact same path, but what they do to get to their success, and success is personal. Everyone's success is different. And you've got to look intrinsically and understand what success looks like for you. And so when I see these various women across our firm, they inspire me, because what we do as a profession, as architects and interior designers, landscape architects, structural engineers, MEP engineers, the entire AEC industry, we are crafting our communities. We are molding the built environment that impacts the rest of our society. We have a tremendous passion. And I mean, it's just, these people who are doing these things through such different adversity and coming out on top and saying, nope, I'm taking that adversity and molding it for positive and going to better my community, better myself. That's inspiring to me. And I think there's so many women who do that. But for me personally, there are key people. Cindy's been key in my career. But there's been lots of women, throughout. I mean, I think also I learned recently more about Florence Knoll and just the amount back in that day that they did. Like just the architecture community. I mean, all the way, I mean, sometimes it was like, okay, that's a little too much. Did you have any free time? But it's,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right?
Florence was doing a lot.
It's just so interesting. I know. I feel very like I have not accomplished at anything compared to her, like what, but like,
I mean, we can't compare ourselves.
Right. But we naturally do. But I think it's just when we can look at one another and be inspired and I'm going to say this because this is also taboo, and not be catty women to one another
or jealous
or it's, jealous
or gatekeeping.
Gatekeeping. Absolutely. Because that's what we do. We are catty, vindictive people a lot of the times as women, and we've got to lift each other up. And that's what I love being able to point to various women in my career and be like, they inspired me and they're the reason why I keep going. Cause I thought my career was going to peak at a certain time, full transparency. And I'm so thankful I had women to continue to inspire me. And I had a spouse and a family who encouraged me and thank me for it, because they recognize the sacrifices I make. And I love, at the end of the day, I love what I do and seeing the built environment that we impact, but I love seeing the lives that I directly impact and the growth in our team members and as people. So thank you to everyone who's inspired me, and hope I can continue that for the next generations.
That's good.
For sure.
That's great.
I don't know. I think, I mean, we're all about women supporting women on this show, right? Like, that is why we do what we do. Even the ladies we talk about in history inspire us and we feel supported by them. So I love all the ladies that inspired you in your life, and I'm glad you got to share those with us.
Thanks.
You know, I've found this conversation really inspirational. And just on a personal note, like, as three ladies in our 30s, and especially me, like, I'm at the age where I'm thinking, can I have a child? Can I have my career? Like, this conversation, the three of us have had it often, but it's so nice to hear and to meet you, a managing director, doing it all and inspiring us different ways that we can do it. Well, so,
thank you. But one thing I just want to add, Nordry, is I don't do it all.
That's right.
I talk about that in the blog. Yes. Let's not say that anymore. We also have to normalize that. No. And I know we didn't really talk about that a lot, but we've got to dispel. We've got to blow up the myth of the superwoman. We've got to be real. Right now, I'm in my office. I drove 30 minutes to come in to make sure I wasn't going to, you know, be interrupted by my children or my husband. It's a sacrifice, you know, just to do this, and but to hopefully inspire other people and support other women. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing outside of all the caregiving is we also have to recognize we shouldn't be trying to do it all. And we've got to stop that that talk because it's putting on undue pressures. Let's stop it. So I don't, Nordre, you pick.
No, I like that.
You pick what you want to accomplish and you do what you need to in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. What Kirsten teaches us and through the blog is that it's not the ability to do it all, but it's the courage to ask for the support when needed and accepting the support when given.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the lesson there.
Definitely. Okay. I'm going to revise my vocabulary, the way I think about it, because it's true. Like one of my fears is like, how do I do it all? And I need to stop thinking about it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you again and again.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see how this continues to unfold. I'm sure that this won't be the last time we speak. I hope. I'm in Texas.
Oh, awesome. You're in Houston.
I am in Houston. Yeah. Good. So please keep in touch. I am so happy that I had no idea that you drove to the office. Thank you for doing that for us.
Oh, yeah.
That's really lovely.
I figured this would be the better sound and no one's here, so
and the background is so nice.
Yes.
Tell us who's behind you.
All right, so behind me is Dolly Parton, as well as Ann Richards, who was, if I'm going to get this right, the second female governor of Texas. So in all of our offices here in Austin, we have different artwork, and it's all kind of musical themed. We're on Music Lane in Austin on South Congress.
Nice.
And I just thankfully was put into the office that had two badass women.
That's right.
Represented. So, you know, and it's, what's great is it's always a conversation starter. Everyone's like, who is that on your back wall? Is that Dolly Parton? I'm like, yes, it is. And she's talking to Ann Richards, the second female governor of Texas.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like that so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, please keep in touch.
Will do.
Maybe we'll need to have a follow-up conversation in a year or so.
Okay, that sounds good.
So you can let us know how it's all going.
Yes.
And thank you.
Well, thank y'all for your time.
Well, I really found this charrette super interesting. I hope all of you out there listening enjoyed it too. Please let us know what topics you would like us to have a charrette on, and you might hear a future episode based on your suggestion. Again, thank you.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links and further information on this episode.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your coworkers, tell everyone. Give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
But if you don't need any more swag and you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's G-A-B-L Media.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. See ya!
Adios!
Bye!
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.